Good morning, everyone. Here's the latest news from the NBC newsroom in New York, Clyde Cattell reporting. And first this morning, a late report on that tropical hurricane that hit the Atlantic seaboard last night. The storm is now moving out to sea along the coast of Maine, leaving a trail of destruction from North Carolina to Massachusetts. Now a quick check of some warfront highlights. American soldiers and Marines have landed on Palau Island, 600 miles east of the Philippines. That strike followed by just a few hours, the new invasion of Halmahera Island by forces of General MacArthur. In Europe, troops of the First Army are building up their assault on the German city of Aachen after piercing the Siegfried Line to advance 8 miles into the Reich. Russian troops are shelling Warsaw, and Fifth Army forces in Italy have taken 2 more fortified points in their assault on the Gothic Line. On the European battlefront, the American First Army has penetrated the first defense belt of the Siegfried Line on a 6-mile front east of St. Vith. This drive has carried the Yanks 8 miles into Germany toward Prüm, a road junction 30 miles above Trier. Other First Army columns have advanced to within 1 mile of Aachen and have launched a full-scale assault on that Siegfried Line stronghold. A number of German villages have been overrun east of Rutjen, a border town 9 miles southeast of Aachen. American Third Army units have driven forward east and north across the Moselle River near Nancy from a half a dozen firm bridgeheads. Fighting has edged closer to the Moselle west of Metz and in Thionville to the north. And now for a direct report from overseas, we call in NBC in London. Come in, NBC in London.
Hello, New York. Yeah, Brownie.
This is Stanley Richardson speaking from Supreme Allied Headquarters in London.
Allied military censorship permits me to summarize for American listeners today the known component parts of the military force forming the American ground troops under General Eisenhower's Allied command in the Western Front campaign. These units compose the United States First Army under Lieutenant General Courtney Hodges, the United States Third Army under Lieutenant George Patton, and the United States Ninth Army under Lieutenant General William H. Simpson. Here are the elements making up these armies. The 5th, 7th, 8th, 12th, 15th, and 19th Army Corps. The 1st, 2nd, 4th, 5th, 8th, 9th, 29th, 30th, 35th, 79th, and 90th Infantry Divisions, the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions, and the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 6th, and 7th Armored Divisions. Those American Army components now engaged on the Western Front, those units which I have just named, add up to many hundreds of thousands of men. And many listeners at home, with relatives and friends in the service, will recognize their designations. This is Stanley Richardson at Supreme Allied Headquarters in London, returning you to the NBC newsroom in New York.
And that was Stanley Richardson reporting direct from NBC in London. Here's a bulletin. Armored spearheads of the United States First Army pushed into the full depth of the Siegfried Line today in a thrust that carried 5 miles east of Aachen and enveloped that city from three sides. And another bulletin, the Germans announced today the evacuation of Maastricht, 15th largest Netherlands city of 68,000 in the narrow Dutch appendix between Belgium and Germany. American and French forces of the 7th Army at the southern end of the Allied line in France have cracked outposts of German defenses guarding the Belfort Gap. Those columns are within 20 miles of that path to southwestern Germany. The 5th Army in Italy has made its deepest northern penetration in the area north of Lucca, 15 miles from the western coast. Two places, both about 4 miles north of Lucca, have been overrun in this advance. The 5th Army is now about 16 miles beyond the Arno River. Canadian units of the 8th Army on the Adriatic have crossed the Marano River with tanks and infantry and are within 1 mile of the Rimini airfield. Those new American blows in the Pacific highlight the warfront news this morning. Taking the new assaults in order, the first word came last night from General MacArthur, an announcement that his forces had been landed in the Halmahera Islands. The Allies went ashore on Moratai Island, northernmost of the island group that's been under such heavy air attacks in recent weeks. And that landing surprised the Japs. They had expected an invasion, of course, but they expected it to come at the southern end of the island chain. That's only 250 miles south of the Philippines. MacArthur's men went in under a powerful warship and aircraft screen, but so great was the element of surprise in their northern landing that they met only feeble enemy opposition. Casualties in the initial phases of the assault are described as very light. Then, in the early hours of this morning, came the second announcement, the word from Admiral Nimitz that his Marine and Army assault units had landed on Palau Island, 560 miles east of the Philippines. It was this second announcement that carries the real dramatic impact of the assault, a twin offensive to clear the road back to Bataan and Corregidor. It's the greatest combined offensive of the Pacific War, and it sounds the ominous note of what the Japs can expect from our Pacific forces, a solid indication that General MacArthur's promise to return to the Philippines and then move on to Japan is going to be realized, and that the blow won't be long in coming. The twin invasion assault threatens to break the chain of sprawling island bases established by the Japs around the Philippines and the western and southern approaches to the Chinese mainland. The exact point of our newest landing has not yet been revealed, but a morning report from Tokyo admitting the invasion says the attack was centered on Peleliu Island, southernmost of the chain of atolls that make up the Palau group. From both Admiral Nimitz and the Japs, we get indications that the battle for Palau will be a tough one. One of the hardest battles of the Pacific is believed in progress already on the island, and the communique says our landings are continuing against stiff ground opposition. The Japs are putting out one of the usual fantastic stories, a report that about 2,500 Americans were killed in the invasion attempt. But, of course, there's no basis for any such claim as yet. We have bulletin news from Chongqing, too, this morning. Chinese forces in North Burma and China's Yunnan province have established contact at a point in Yunnan. And as a result, the Chinese are now in control of a trail between the big bases of Michinaw in northern Burma and Tengchung in Yunnan province. That news comes on the heels of yesterday's announcement that Tengchung had been recaptured by the Chinese. The two forces have been driving toward each other for months, trying to open an overland supply route to China from India. The way to such a junction was opened by the capture of Tengchung. Michinaw has been in Allied hands for some time now. A late German report says that the Red Army has opened a large-scale offensive in Latvia at points east and south of Riga. According to the Nazis, the Russian drive was launched by 40 infantry divisions supported by tanks and planes. Apparently, the Red Army is opening up on the northern front again after concentrating its action to the south in recent weeks. From the Polish front, we get word that the Soviets are now shelling the capital of Warsaw, hitting from their new positions in Praga, the eastern suburb of the city. The Germans claim they have blown up bridges over the Vistula to block a direct assault by the Russians. The Red Army positions at Praga are on the eastern side of the Vistula. And further to the south, the Russians have increased their hold on Transylvania and have advanced to within 13 miles of the capital of that province. Here's a bulletin. A Finnish communique announces this morning that 9 German ships were sunk by Finnish coastal batteries last night when the Nazis attempted to attack a Finnish fort in the Bay of Finland. And in the action, the Germans established what is described as a weak bridgehead, but most of the attacks were repulsed. And in hurling back the Nazi assaults, the 9 enemy ships were either sunk or set afire. The West Indian hurricane, which spread devastation along nearly 1,000 miles of the Atlantic coast from North Carolina to Massachusetts, has swung out to sea off southern Maine. 12 deaths were attributed to the storm, which developed winds of from 80 to 100 miles an hour. They were accompanied by torrents of rain. The greatest damage appears to have been in Atlantic City and neighboring New Jersey coastal resorts. In those areas, roofs of some apartment houses were torn off and other dwellings damaged, leaving thousands homeless. The famous $1 million and steel piers at Atlantic City were badly damaged, and the Heinz Pier was said to be almost a total loss. Most of the smaller towns on Long Island were without light and power after the storm, and roads were blocked with torn wires and trees. There was comparatively little damage in the New York City area and Connecticut, but transportation was disrupted. At Quebec, the Roosevelt-Churchill conference has been joined by British Foreign Secretary Eden, and at least one more full-dress session of the leaders and their combined chiefs of staff is expected before the talks are ended this weekend. The conference will reach its climax when Mr. Roosevelt and Mr. Churchill make a public statement on what they have accomplished during the meeting. One announcement that's expected is the formation of a new United States command organization geared to our war plans in the Pacific, a command that will be dominantly Navy. In Washington, there has been a snag in working out details of the Dumbarton-Oakes conference, and the indications are that the conferees are meeting more difficulty than was first anticipated. Apparently, the troubles aren't too serious, though, and the American chairman, Undersecretary of State Stettinius, has reiterated his complete confidence in the successful outcome of the peace talks. The plea of the labor unions to bring pay envelopes up to date with the rise in the cost of living is going to get a hearing from the War Labor Board. The board may make a recommendation to President Roosevelt to revise the so-called Little Steel wage formula upward before the November election. Labor and industry groups will testify at the Labor Board hearings beginning September the 26th, running through October 5th. The inquiry was ordered after reports that living expenses have risen far beyond the level of January 1941, and that the Little Steel wage formula has not been revised to cover increases in living expenses during the last 3 years. An announcement is expected soon from Roosevelt-Churchill conferences at Quebec on a new Navy-dominated United States command in the Pacific. Governor Dewey is on the way to the West Coast for 4 major campaign speeches during next week. Last night, the Republican candidate stopped in Billings, Montana, long enough to declare his election campaign won't interfere with the war. In fact, he went on to say more effective prosecution of the war will result if he's elected. John L. Lewis has beaten down a family fight inside his United Mine Workers Union. He smashed an autonomous move for district self-government. And in Kansas City, about 600 workers have walked out of a General Motors plant, leaving shell casing machinery idle. The strike is blamed on the discharge of a worker who had a first fight with his foreman, a fist fight, rather. The Democratic National Chairman Robert Hannigan charges that Republican speakers are directly injecting racial prejudice into the November election. He points out that Republicans have referred repeatedly to the chairman of the CIO Political Action Committee, Sidney Hillman, as a foreign-born labor leader. Hannigan told a press conference he was hopeful this kind of talk would be discontinued in view of a statement by the Republican National Chairman Herbert Brownell that racial and religious issues would be kept out of the campaign. The Treasury announces that a new income tax form calling for simplified computations based on elementary arithmetic will be available to taxpayers in March. Most taxpayers will be permitted to file withholding receipts as their complete return. The new form is designed for those who are required or prefer to submit an itemized computation. Persons earning less than $5,000 yearly and who claim no more than 10% deductions for charitable contributions, interest payments, and medical expenses will figure their return through a tax table contained in the form. Those claiming greater deductions must itemize their computations. Taxpayers who earn $5,000 or more will have a choice of taking a standard deduction of $500 or itemizing their deductions in detail, but must compute their tax in either case. The 10% deduction will be used as standard in figuring the tax of those who use withholding receipts instead of the form. Australian Minister Sir Owen Dixon has given up his post in the United States to return to his former positions on the High Court of Australia. That's the equivalent of our Supreme Court. The War Food Administration says that the 1944 food crop probably will be the largest in history, and it urges housewives to help absorb the surplus by storing a few extra pounds and serving more in the family menu. And here's a brief summary of the news highlights. The Germans have admitted the evacuation of the Dutch city of Maastricht between Belgium and Germany. Russian and Polish forces are believed to have stormed into the Polish capital of Warsaw. German troops are said to have attacked the Finnish island of Högland in the Gulf of Finland. American forces have made 2 new invasion jumps toward the Philippines. And the Atlantic Coast hurricane has blown out to sea off southern Maine. And that's the news up to now, brought to you by Clyde Kittel from the NBC newsroom in New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.